Welcome back to the Black, White, and Gray Pod, where we speak with pundits, activists, and average Joes about real shtick. I'm your unqualified host, Matthew Thompson. Today's episode is with the amazing Morgan Sell of the Eastern Panhandle Green Coalition, or the EPGC. The EPGC's mission is to preserve and protect the quality of life for all residents of the Eastern Panhandle of West Virginia through community education on environmental and political issues, scientific policy research and advocacy, grassroots organizing and coalition building, leadership development, direct citizen action, and media outreach. Please check out the EPGC social media and their website, epgreenwv.org. The EPGC hosted a live Earth Day event last Friday at the Fridays for Future protest at the construction of the Rockwool factory in Jefferson County, West Virginia. And somebody from the EPGC is there every Friday fighting for your clean water and air. In this episode, we gain a bit of perspective on who Morgan is before we dive into the local and regional threat that is Rockwool and how local government is paving the way for pollution. The music in today's episode is Mellow Garden by my boy Kubo. He's a Russian DJ and producer who I discuss politics with from time to time and who I eventually hope to have on this cast as well. Kubo, C-O-U-B-O. Is available on all streaming platforms, but please check them out on SoundCloud or Bandcamp.
Am I being recorded still? I just don't know.
I just started.
Okay, great. Cool.
So, I think we were talking about something along the lines of faith and purpose and pushing for a vision. I'm not sure if we had any
base purpose
direction.
Pushing for a vision. Yeah,
just the cause. Yeah, in general.
It's interesting. I'm doing just some brainstorming myself right now around faith and climate justice because of a talk that I'm giving next Wednesday for the West Virginia Interfaith Power and Light program. It's funded by West Virginia Rivers, and so I've just been kind of like diving in a little bit more about this work. And one podcast that has a lot of good information on it is called No Place Like Home. Mm-hmm. It's by Anna Jane Joyner and Marianne Hitt. She's the campaign director for the Sierra Club. Marianne is, and she lives here in Shepherdstown. So they've been talking about faith and climate for a while, and it's just for me, somebody who a person of faith who's been considering herself as a person of faith for the last decade or so, but not having grown up in a church, it has been just a common theme for me since the beginning of the Rockwool fight. Like, I was always kind of known to be the person that just like keeps the faith even when things are grim and dark and look like they're hopeless. Like, I would just be like, it's all good, like we're here, and you know, so it's been an interesting journey over the last few years understanding that connection. So
I can imagine. So what do you see the main struggle is then between people of faith who see this world as an indestructible playing field that we've been gifted to find our way to, I guess to whatever consciousness to find our way to or not find our way to, Christ consciousness, versus people who see the world we're in as a host reality with a very vulnerable
environment,
but just like what, where do you see that large divide is, and why do you think that disconnect allows for so much people who consider themselves people of faith to
like wreak havoc,
right?
Basically.
I guess they don't even really see it that way though.
Right. There is what seems to be a divide happening, or a split of consciousness on this plane right now, at least. And we see that in terms of folks that might walk by a piece of trash and pick it up versus folks that might walk by and not pick it up. And that's such a general, like, general visual. There's a whole other conversation around racial inequality and the ways that racism has structured our society here in the United States. I'm thinking specifically about my time when I was doing mission work in Baltimore, and the idea of these, you know, people from Shepherdstown coming in and cleaning up these streets in Baltimore, and thinking about this larger picture of, well, why are their streets so ridden with trash, right? And it's not because they care less about the earth. It's just a compounding of hopelessness that's been laid upon them, that they're not cared for, and then that translates into that other outside physical reality that they're living in, responding to. So yes, it's definitely a large, I feel like that's a much bigger question about, there's folks that could, you know, seemingly not care about the environment, but be most affected by it. And then there's also folks that might just be so much trapped in their own egos or capitalist ways that they are just buying and using, you know, plastics and whatever else to such a degree that they've lost touch with reality of the source and the land, the home, right?
Right.
We are kind of like, we're kind of visitors on this earth. We don't own the earth. We don't own the air. And I remember looking at a book one time. I was sitting in a car, you know, I was getting my car fixed. I'm sitting in the little place there, and I look down and see this book with the indigenous, you know, people on the front cover. And it was talking about, how can you sell the air? It doesn't belong to you, you know. And that's another tangent probably.
Yeah.
About the earth and who owns it, and well, why the people came in.
I think that all ties it in together, because, I mean, it's really all a matter of perspective. You got people in Baltimore who are surrounded by man-made structures, and trash doesn't really seem like that much of an out-of-place contrast against the pavement as it does, like, floating in a stream or something like that. Where, I mean, you're just surrounded by pollution.
Yeah, you're further separated.
Yeah, and, I mean, the quality is just not the same, where you have the whole concept of the outdoors, where, I mean, the outdoors is where life is. So people are just so removed from everything. And with what you said with how can you sell the air, I mean, people are trying to survive in the capitalist structure that they're in, I guess. I mean, if you can find a way to sell something, if somebody will buy it, I mean, a lot of people are just like, why not? That's going to be, I mean, that's just in taking energy to where I can redistribute it to how I see things should go, or my way of life, or whatever else. So I don't think that's super tangential. I think that's very, very relevant. And as you were speaking, I was just thinking of how many aspects to this there are to where,
right,
like, if there were one simple solution right in front of us, we could all just get on the same page. But you've got past and future and presence to take into account, and what that means to everybody specifically, and how that's been molded in people's mind, and like their idea of what has happened and what is going to happen and what can happen, and their idea of comfort in the moment, and their idea of where they are in life, and how that compares to other people, and their standing, and whether they feel like they need to be above somebody else, or whether they need to find their way to equality to somebody else, or however that manifests within them. I think we're just generally just so removed from each other and trying to find our way to individuality.
Right.
So aggressively.
And we all want to help find that solution. And I think the simplest way you can boil it down to is, like, when we heal ourselves, then we heal the earth. And So when we can take a step back and see like what harm or what detriment am I causing to the earth or to the world, then you're really starting to take ownership within your home, within your family, and hopefully that ripples out.
I think we just found the answer to life in under 10 minutes. Self-healing and self-care.
Self-healing, yes, exactly. Self-healing journeys, I think it's so important. And while we're at it, it's why the band-aids aren't working in America. Like what I see within the work that I'm doing at the federal level is that they're working to introduce this act called the Thrive Act, and it's called, like, I think it stands for Transforming, Healing. I'm gonna mess up the acronym. It's all good, but it's about healing from a ground up approach. And if you can't address, not just reparations, but identifying and investing in communities, tribal nations, and Black and brown communities, then you're not addressing the root cause of the other disease and sickness of the nation. So I think the holistic approach is you have to first address the core racism issue of these indigenous tribes, as well as the racism within Black and brown communities. And I've just been doing a lot of like understanding of how it's racism can all be boiled down into policies that further racism and policies that don't further racism or that are anti-racist, right? And so it's like that's, I think, where the healing can begin. And it is speaking with a lot of privilege, it is reassuring to see that this language is entering into federal legislation and being looked at from this perspective, especially after like being in the place of hell that many communities were for the last 4 years. So,
It's going to take a lot of coming together to get people
right.
to shift perspective and make people aware of everything that's.
People are just suffering, and people need, especially right now, like money to even feel like they can get out of the places that they're in. It's just, I speak from such a privileged perspective that, my needs are met, and what I am trying to enforce in my life is that more of that place of humility and humbleness. And that's, I think, why, my mind changes and my world changes when my perspective changes. So when I travel to Baltimore or DC, or when I can sit with someone who has perceived less than me, then I can like ground myself in like what I can do, and how privileged I am and where I am.
And there are a lot of steps to take. You got to gain that perspective. You got to go in, talk,
Right.
and find out how people feel about that trash that's being left around. You got to find out if that's everyone as a whole or what's perpetuating that. Because, I mean, surely it's not the city folk who are littering. It's people within that who
Right.
are and who just have that perspective. I mean, there's mindful and people with like an organism mentality everywhere. Just gotta get on that same page and amplify.
Yeah, so there's always work to be done, but that's why it's important to have faith. And when I lose faith, like, I'm often rejuvenated in my faith when I can listen to other people speaking out on these same issues. And so a lot of the time, like in activist work, I will just kind of feel like defeated or ready to just like throw in the towel. And then what my pastor told me is like, when you're not working, God will hold your work for you. So like it's okay to like rest and to take breaks, because your work is being held by God. And then during those breaks and those rests, I'm usually watching other people who are not taking a break and being rejuvenated by listening to them. So,
right.
Yeah. But it's a good reminder to not always feel like you have to be producing and, doing too much. So
yeah, absolutely.
Rest is good.
100%. I've run into dozens of activists over the last couple of weeks that just feel, they end up just getting, end up feeling beat down from like not reaching their goals or whatever, and just need that time to recharge and get that perspective and talk to people and realize that what you're trying to do may not come together in your lifetime. So it's
right.
enjoying the push and having that purpose and being able to reveal to yourself who you are. And I mean, pave the way for that future. It's not always about making headway or knowing that things are going to come together. It's just the ability to express yourself and be that goodness.
Yeah, I think this ties into it. This past week, I was listening to one of my mentors talk, and he said, like, I think this is what he says. I could be misquoting him. He said, like, praying to God, right, and doing those things praying to God and doing acts of service are the same thing. So changing the perspective to when you are working, giving acts of service, it is a sense of prayer.
Right.
It is devotion. So when you start to, you know, shift your perspective on your actions are little pieces of devotion, you know, your actions are devotion.
Right.
When you're washing the dishes, when you're, you know, planting your garden, when you're doing these things, they're an act of devotion to connect you to that. And that kind of keeps you humble.
Absolutely.
And keeps you working. So
I feel like there's a lot of separation with all of that, but it's really all just analogous to positivity. And I mean, you can do all these things, but as long as they're like making that push for the right direction, that's really what matters.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. And we are just one piece of the puzzle, right? Like I don't know what funny thing I can say, but we're going to be here again, most of us.
Yeah.
And so this is just one,
and we've been here
one
before.
Life. Like if you believe in reincarnation, then you're just going to keep coming back until, you know, your work is done. And the work that you've been given for this life is important work and should be valued. And yeah.
100%. We are a part of the puzzle and we are the puzzle.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So on the other side of that, what do you find kind of perpetuates the positive message?
I think you're asking like, what is my why?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The origin of the story is that my ancestors were poisoned by, a polluting factory. And so once I found out that part of my story, it all kind of started making more sense as to why I cared so much about this. And so what keeps hope alive is just that remembering of suffering that people have undergone, and thinking, you know, that maybe there's a way that we could help end the suffering of some humans or some people, that's a real source of inspiration for me. When you can see God in everyone, and see it all kind of playing out in this 3D reality, your purpose is to see God in the homeless, to see God in the poverty and in the addict and whoever else might be being affected by things like this. So, yeah, it's a It's a big purpose, and I'm grateful for the call to help others.
Right. It just sounds like largely that golden rule, just treating everybody like you're seeing yourself from the outside and giving
treat others how you would want to be treated.
Right? Giving other people that support that you know at the core of your soul that you do and will eventually need.
Yeah, and that's what God told us, like back in what they call the Manna Society. He or she or whoever you think God is, like, told society that there would be enough bread, manna, for all, and you shouldn't hoard your bread. You shouldn't, because if you hoard your bread, it's going to spoil and become rotten.
Right.
And he would continue to give them bread back in this manna society as long as they would promise not to hoard it, and with the promise, God would promise that he would continue to give them all that they needed. And so we've just kind of forgotten that as a society. We have a bunch of people that are thinking they're big deals and hoarding their manna, and that's, I think, why we're in the predicament that we are in today, where we're having to have some harsh realizations and kind of be put in the corner and said, like, remember, you're not supposed to, you're supposed to share. It's like we could all go back to second grade and be told that we should share with each other and, treat each other the way you want to be treated. It'd be nice.
We all need to survive.
That's exactly. And there's enough for everybody.
Yeah.
For sure.
It can be very, very hard to spread that message and to see every aspect of that sometimes. So Anchor limits me to 30 minutes in a podcast. I'm going to have to break this up into episode 2A and B. See you.